Come on, love. We can't stand out here. It's freezing. But Anastasia refused to move. Elaine tried persuading and coercing her, then tugged gently on her arm, but Anastasia stood her ground. Passers-by glanced at them. "You'll have to pick her up and carry her," Elaine said to Ian at last, trying again to move her forward. Anastasia resisted.
"Okay, I'll give you a carry," Ian said,
and scooped her up. Anastasia opened her mouth and screamed for all she was worth. He quickly put her down again. "You walk, then," Elaine said anxiously, starting to panic. "Come on, we can't stay here." Anastasia stared at her but didn't move. Elaine tried again to persuade her. So did Ian, but the child's expression was set. It was clear she wasn't going anywhere of her own accord. "You'll have to carry her," Elaine said again in desperation. Ian picked her up. Anastasia screamed, but he continued into the hotel, with Elaine following close behind. Reception was still busy, but whereas before, on their way out, it had been an asset, now it was every parent's nightmare. Guests and staff turned to see where the noise was coming from, some with condemnatory expressions, wondering what the problem was and why the parents couldn't control their child. Keeping their eyes averted, Elaine and Ian hurried across the lobby to the lift, which mercifully was waiting and empty. Stepping in, Elaine quickly pressed the button for their floor and the doors closed. Accepting defeat, Anastasia stopped screaming and struggled to be put down. A bit flushed but otherwise unfazed, she continued sucking her lollipop.
"First battle won,"
Ian said perkily, but Elaine wasn't so sure. Her confidence had taken a big hit. Not only had she no idea what had provoked Anastasia's tantrum, but she didn't know how they should have handled it. Supposing she did it again when they couldn't just pick her up and run to their hotel room? What would she do then? She suddenly felt great empathy for those parents she'd seen in the street or supermarket who gave in to their screaming toddler's demands. If held to ransom by her child in a public place, she was in no doubt she'd do the same. Once in their hotel room, energized from the 2-hour sleep that afternoon, Anastasia ran around opening drawers, pulling on cupboard doors, rummaging in their cases and generally exploring everything in sight. Although it was only natural for a child to be inquisitive, it was wearing. Elaine followed her around, returning items to their correct places and making sure she didn't do any damage or hurt herself. She picked up the discarded lollipop stick that Anastasia threw on the floor and put it in the waste paper basket. A few times Anastasia babbled something in her own language, perhaps about the object she was investigating. Elaine told her the word in English, but Anastasia didn't repeat it. When she ran into the bathroom, Elaine followed her and had to stop her from repeatedly flushing the toilet and turning on the taps, which fascinated her. She tried to climb into the bath. "You can have another bath tomorrow," Elaine said. "I'll wash your hair too." Not understanding and preferring to have her own way, Anastasia kept trying to climb over the side of the bath and eventually slipped and bumped her head. Not a bad knock, but enough to make her cry out, mutter something that could have been a curse, and give the bath a good kick.
"Shall I make up that pot noodle or whatever it is?"
Ian called from the bedroom.
"She may be hungry now."
"Yes, please,"
Elaine returned. The instructions on the side of the pot were diagrammatic and simply involved pouring boiling water onto the contents of the pot and letting it stand for 2 minutes to hydrate. There was a kettle in the room for making tea and coffee. Having heard Ian's voice and sensing something was going on that needed her attention, Anastasia ran from the bathroom. Elaine then had to keep her away from the boiling kettle, which she wanted to touch. As they waited for the mixture to hydrate and then cool a little, Ian looked up the main ingredients listed on the pot in their phrasebook.
"Mutton," he translated, "flour, noodles, cabbage, onion, pepper," and so on.
Once the food was ready, Ian tested it.
"Interesting," he said, unsure.
Anastasia was also interested in what was in the pot as the aroma rose and spread around the room. Elaine guided her to the chair, spread a tissue on her lap and gave her the pot and spoon, but stayed close by to help her or mop up the mess. Anastasia peered in, stirred the mixture, jiggled the spoon up and down, but didn't eat. Mmm, yummy. Eat it, Elaine encouraged, smacking her lips. Anastasia played with the food some more, but didn't try to eat it.
You must be hungry by now, Elaine said. You've had nothing all day.
Taking the spoon, she ate a little herself in the hope Anastasia would copy, but she just pushed the pot away. Elaine tried again, without success. It appeared that when Anastasia set her mind to something, she was resolute.
Perhaps we could try room service again, Ian suggested,
when it was clear Anastasia wasn't going to eat the food in the pot.
We'll have to order for us before long.
But what? Elaine asked. She hardly ate anything of what we ordered last time.
I could ask someone in the kitchen for advice, he said. Surely they will know what children here like to eat.
He went to the phone by the bed and pressed the key for room service.
Speak English? He asked when it was answered.
A little.
What do children living here like to eat?
You want to eat?
Yes, but I need to know what a child living in this country likes to eat.
The room service menu is in your room by the phone, came the reply.
I know, thank you. What do I order for a child?
You would like to order now?
So it appeared his English was very limited.
We'll order later, thank you,
Ian said, and ended the call. Elaine looked at him.
I have another idea, he said. At least one of the girls at the reception desk speaks good English. I'll take Anastasia down and ask her to find out what she likes to eat. Failing that, if she doesn't eat tomorrow, we'll have to phone Dr. Chiabanu for advice.
What if Anastasia throws a tantrum and starts screaming when you try and bring her back?
Elaine asked, worried.
I'll carry her.
I'll come with you to help, she said.
No, you stay here and have a rest. We won't be long.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Elaine smiled gratefully. A few minutes to herself would be very welcome right now. She took one of Anastasia's cardigans from her case as it was cooler in reception and helped her into it.
See you soon. Be good, she said, and kissed her cheek.
Anastasia stared at her, uncomprehending. Once they'd gone, Elaine had a quick tidy-up. The room was in a mess, and then lay on the bed and tried to relax. Her eyes felt heavy and her forehead tight, as if she had the beginning of a headache. Little wonder with everything they'd been through in the last 24 hours, and she reminded herself what a momentous, life-changing day it had been. They had woken as a childless couple, attended court, which had been emotionally exhausting in itself, and now they were parents, and Ian was out with their daughter. It didn't get more significant than that. Ian was gone for over half an hour, and Elaine was on the verge of going to find them when she heard thumping on the door, Anastasia, and then Ian inserting his key card into the lock. Anastasia rushed into the room, clearly very excited. Ian was smiling too.
That girl on reception was so helpful, he said. She was about to finish her shift, but when I explained our problem, she stayed and had a good chat with Anastasia. Then she helped me order from room service. I've ordered for us too. It should be here in about 20 minutes.
Fantastic, Elaine said.
She picked up Anastasia's cardigan, which she'd thrown on the floor. What else did she talk to her about? You were gone ages.
She told Anastasia we were nice people and she was lucky to have a mummy and daddy to look after her. I asked her to explain that we would be staying in the hotel for a week and then flying home, and I showed her the photos of where we lived on my phone. She also told me about a park not far from here. I thought we could try it tomorrow, although obviously it's cold, so we wouldn't stay long.
Great! And Anastasia didn't scream when you tried to bring her up to the room?
No, she was fine. So hopefully she understands more now and will settle.
Wonderful. Oh, thank you.
Buoyed up and feeling more positive, Elaine took out the crayons and colouring books she'd brought with them to keep Anastasia amused until their dinner arrived. What she didn't know until months later, when Anastasia had learnt sufficient English to tell her, was that she'd repeatedly told the receptionist she didn't want to stay with Mummy and Daddy, but to go back to the orphanage. Despite ordering what Anastasia had told the receptionist she wanted, When the food arrived, she ate very little. Ian said again that if it didn't change tomorrow, they'd have to phone Dr. Chiabanu for advice. He and Elaine ate, and then it was time for Anastasia to go to bed. Elaine helped her change into her pajamas without too much fuss, explaining what she was doing and why, although Anastasia didn't understand. Then she took her to the bathroom to brush her teeth. Anastasia seemed to know how to brush her teeth, but didn't like the toothpaste, although it was one sold in England for toddlers. She pulled a face and spat it on the floor. Elaine tried her with their adult toothpaste, but she didn't like that either. Perhaps she'd never used toothpaste before, but at least she had brushed her teeth, which was important. Elaine and Ian knew it wasn't ideal all sleeping in one room, but there wasn't an alternative, and it was only for a week and then they'd be home and Anastasia would have her own room. Elaine also knew that establishing a good bedtime routine was important, so she read Anastasia a story, persuaded her into the fold-away bed, which was close to theirs. Then they both kissed her goodnight and Ian dimmed the lights. As they were all in the same room, Ian and Elaine lay on their bed and pretended to be asleep, with the intention that once Anastasia was in a deep sleep, they could read for a while. But Anastasia had different ideas. She was in a strange room where everything was new and interesting. She certainly wasn't ready to sleep. And unlike at the orphanage where the bars on her cot had kept her in, as well as a good telling off if she tried to climb out, there were no bars on her bed, and she was able to slip out easily. She ran around the room, not upset but more hyperactive, opening and closing drawers, picking up anything she could reach and then banging on the door. Elaine and Ian repeatedly settled her and told her it was bedtime. By midnight, when she still hadn't settled, they were exhausted and craving sleep themselves, so they tried taking her into their bed, but she clambered out. Just before 2 a.m, their bedside phone rang, and Ian answered it. It was reception. Someone had complained about the noise coming from their room, and they were asked to keep it down for the convenience of other guests. Ian apologized, and Elaine felt acutely embarrassed. They knew they were going to have to be firmer with Anastasia, so they took her into their bed again and this time stopped her from leaving. She screamed, kicked, tried to hit them, but eventually fell asleep. When Elaine woke at 7:10, Anastasia was nowhere to be seen. Chapter 12. Another Worry.
"Where's Anastasia?" Elaine cried, sitting bolt upright and waking Ian. They were both immediately out of bed. She wasn't in the room, and Elaine rushed into the bathroom, followed by Ian. She was sitting on the floor, surrounded by the contents of Elaine's handbag, and playing with her mobile phone. "That's naughty," Elaine said, taking the phone from her. Anastasia looked hurt.
"She's only playing," Ian said.
"It's not your phone," Elaine said sharply, checking to see what damage had been done. Ian began collecting together the contents of Elaine's handbag and returning them to the bag. Seeing her playthings disappear, Anastasia screamed.
"Stop it!"
Elaine shouted, her nerves frayed from tiredness.
"Come on," Ian said, taking Anastasia's hand. "You can look at the photos on Daddy's phone while Mummy showers and dresses."
He took Anastasia into the room, sat her on their bed and gave her his phone to play with while he made coffee. He had a coffee ready for Elaine when she came out of the shower.
"Thanks, love," she said gratefully. "Sorry I snapped."
"It's okay," he hugged her. "We hardly got any sleep last night. It will get easier."
Elaine nodded and, cupping the mug in her hands, sipped the coffee, thankful that Ian was understanding. It wasn't like her to be so short-tempered. Showered and dressed and partially rejuvenated by coffee, Elaine chose some clothes for Anastasia to wear and helped her into them while Ian got ready. She praised Anastasia at every opportunity, told her she loved her, then found the words for restaurant and breakfast in their phrasebook, and tried to explain they were going to the restaurant for breakfast. Anastasia looked at her blankly. Elaine had big concerns about going to the restaurant, but as Ian said, they couldn't stay holed up in their room all week, and Anastasia wasn't interested in what room service had to offer. He said that if she wouldn't sit at the table or caused any trouble, they'd come straight back to their room. 10 minutes later, they were ready and went down in the lift. There were two couples and three business people already in the restaurant, and Ian and Elaine went to their usual table. Anastasia climbed onto a chair, but at her age, she could barely see over the table. "That's not going to work," Elaine said, immediately growing anxious. The waitress came over, said something they didn't understand, and returned with a child's bolster seat. "Oh, thank you so much," Elaine said. Of course a hotel restaurant would have a child's seat. She should have realized that. The waitress left them to study the menu, which at breakfast was the same every morning. Something quick, Elaine said, glancing at Ian. At present, Anastasia was sitting still, watching the other guests and what was going on around her. But how long that would last was anyone's guess. When the waitress returned to take their orders, Elaine asked for croissants, and Ian scrambled eggs on toast. "What for the child?" Elaine asked, pointing to the menu and then at Anastasia. This waitress spoke some English, but not as much as Maria had. "She have breakfast?" "Yes, please." "What?" The waitress understood and pointed to cornmeal porridge and orange juice on the menu. "Thank you. Yes, please," she said. Relieved, Elaine took the crayons and small colouring pad she'd brought with her from her handbag and set them in front of Anastasia to keep her amused, although at present she was engrossed in all that was going on around her, doubtless having never been in a restaurant before. When the food arrived, Elaine was feeling more confident, and they were both hopeful Anastasia would eat the porridge the waitress had chosen. She looked at it, interested, picked up the glass of juice and drank some, then dipped her spoon into the porridge, took a mouthful and stopped. "Eat up," Elaine encouraged, taking a bite of her croissant. Anastasia put the spoon down. "Perhaps it wants some more milk and sugar on it," Ian suggested, and added a little of each. Anastasia watched him, intrigued, then reached for the sugar and added lots more herself. "That's enough," Elaine said, moving the sugar bowl out of reach. Anastasia tipped on some more milk, then spent a while stirring the mixture before returning the spoon to the table. Ian and Elaine tried to encourage her to have some without success, then offered her bite-sized portions of what they were eating, but she shook her head. She drank some more juice, but then lost interest in what the table had to offer, and slipping from her chair, made a run for the door. Ian went after her, brought her back, and gave her his phone to play with while they quickly finished their breakfast. Although Anastasia's behaviour in the restaurant hadn't caused a huge problem, she'd eaten virtually nothing. It was at least 24 hours since her last meal, longer if she hadn't had breakfast before going to court the day before. Once in their hotel room, Elaine gave her the milkshake they'd bought from the local supermarket, and she drank half of it. Then, wrapping up warm, they went to the park the receptionist had recommended. Midweek in winter, they were the only ones there, but Anastasia enjoyed herself running around and playing on the equipment. As Ian and Elaine helped her on and off the apparatus and pushed her on the swing, it gave them a glimpse of a positive side of parenting and the joy Anastasia would bring to them. This was what being a family was all about, although the fact that Anastasia wasn't eating hung over them. "She must be hungry by now," Ian said as they made their way back to the hotel, faces glowing from the cold. "And tired," Elaine said. "Perhaps we can all have a nap after lunch." The hotel restaurant wasn't open at lunchtime, as most guests were out, so they ordered room service. While they waited, Anastasia finished the milkshake, but when the food arrived, she took a bite from some of it, and that was all.
"If she doesn't have anything tonight, I'll phone Dr. Chiabanu," Ian said.
With lack of sleep catching up on them, at mid-afternoon they drew the curtains in their hotel room, put the Do Not Disturb sign on the door, and lay on the bed with Anastasia between them and told her they were all going to have a sleep. Elaine was so tired she couldn't think straight, and Ian looked pale, although he didn't complain. But Anastasia wasn't tired, and as soon as they closed their eyes, she was off the bed, running around and into everything.
"I swear that child runs on air," Ian said, getting up to bring her back. "She's had hardly any sleep and nothing to eat."
They snuggled down again, but a few more attempts later, they gave up, and Elaine ran a bath for Anastasia, which she liked, and washed her hair at the same time. Elaine praised her immensely. Anastasia sat still while Elaine dried her hair and brushed it into a ponytail. "Good girl," Elaine said again, and felt pleased that she'd been able to successfully do this for her daughter. She and Ian then spent the rest of the afternoon keeping Anastasia amused and as quiet as they could, which was exhausting. Shortly after 5 p.m., with the intention of having an early night, they ordered room service for dinner, including a milkshake for Anastasia. She drank it down, didn't want anything to eat, and was then sick everywhere.
"That's it. I'm going to phone Dr. Chiabanu," Ian said. "Perhaps she's ill."
He tried the orphanage, but was told the doctor wasn't there, so he phoned his mobile. It went through to voicemail and Ian left a message, asking him to phone as soon as possible, as they were concerned about Anastasia. Ian then put the tray and soiled bedspread outside the room for housekeeping to collect. Elaine cleaned up Anastasia and put her into her pyjamas. 5 minutes later, Dr. Chiabanu returned Ian's call.
"What's the problem?" he asked evenly.
"Anastasia won't eat anything and has just vomited," Ian said. "She's very hyperactive and won't sleep or eat. We're wondering if she's ill."
"I doubt she's ill," Dr. Chiabanu replied, an edge of forced patience to his voice. "There's been a lot of changes for her in the last few days. It will take time for her to adjust, as my notes on post-adoption explain. Not eating or sleeping properly is common in the first few weeks and is usually due to anxiety from all the changes. But as she has been sick, to be on the safe side, call a doctor to check her over."
"You think that is necessary?"
"Yes."
"And you can't see her?"
"No, I stopped practicing general medicine some years ago. The hotel will give you the name and contact details of a doctor. He can visit you in your hotel room. You will obviously have to pay him, cash usually, but the charges are reasonable."
"All right, we'll do that," Ian said.
"If there is a problem, the doctor may want you to take Anastasia to the hospital for tests, but I doubt that will be necessary. Some of our children need hospitalizing, but Anastasia is healthy. I filed your adoption papers, and I'll be in contact when they have been returned."
"Thank you,"
Ian replied, and they said goodbye. Elaine, who'd understood the essence of what had been said, was looking at Ian concerned. Anastasia, who'd heard her name mentioned, was looking at him too.
"I'm sure it's nothing to worry about," Ian said, "but Dr. Chiabanu is advising us to get her checked by a doctor. The hotel has the details of one."
He threw Anastasia a smile and, picking up the handset, pressed the button for reception. He explained that they needed to arrange for a doctor to visit their child.
"Is it an emergency?" the receptionist asked.
"No."
"Just one moment and I'll find the doctor's details."
After a minute or so, she came back on the line and gave Ian the name and phone number of a doctor, which Ian wrote on the pad by the phone.
"Would you like me to phone him and arrange the visit?" the receptionist asked helpfully.
"Yes, please."
"I'll phone him now and call you back."
"Thank you,"
Ian said, and replaced the handset. Half an hour passed before the phone rang and the receptionist said the doctor would visit them that evening as soon as he was free.
"Do you have a time?" Ian asked.
"No, he will visit when he has seen the patients at his clinic."
Thanking her again, Ian said goodbye. Now there was nothing to do but wait and keep Anastasia amused as best they could. Despite Dr. Chiabanu's assurance that Anastasia was healthy, they were worried. Supposing she did have something wrong, would it delay them going home? They would feel far more confident if the doctors at home treated Anastasia, but that might not be an option if she was too ill to fly. She didn't appear to be ill, far from it, and she hadn't complained of feeling unwell, or perhaps she had, and they hadn't understood her. They had cash with them, and knew from Dr. Chiabanu's guidance notes roughly what doctors charged, and that it was per visit plus any tests and medication required. They put the television on to try to settle Anastasia, and she watched it for a short while, then they tried some of the games they'd brought with them, and finally Ian gave her his phone to play with. An hour passed, and then two. Was it their imagination, or was Anastasia less active now? Perhaps it was tiredness, or was she ill? Ian looked up "ill" in their phrasebook, and repeated the word to Anastasia, but she stared at him blankly. He tried tummy ache and pain, but with the same result. Finally, around 8 o'clock, a double knock sounded on their door and a deep male voice announced,
"Doctor!"
"Reception must have given him our room number," Ian said, going to answer. Elaine got off the bed and straightened the covers. The room looked a mess again. They were living out of cases and their belongings were everywhere. The doctor came in, middle-aged and of average build, and he shook Ian's hand and smiled politely at Elaine.
"So, this is the child," he said, going to her. "What's she called?"
"Anastasia," Elaine said.
"What's the matter with her?"
"She's been sick. She won't sleep and hasn't eaten properly for at least 2 days," Elaine said. He nodded and spoke to Anastasia in their language as he took a stethoscope from his bag. He listened to her chest and her back and asked her some questions. She replied with a very serious expression. Elaine didn't like to ask him what he'd said. Returning the stethoscope to his bag, he took out an otoscope and looked in her ears, then took her temperature.
"That's all fine," he said. "How many times has she been sick?"
"Once," Elaine replied. He eased Anastasia down so she was flat on the bed and felt her stomach.
"You've adopted her?"
"Yes, 2 days ago."
"A lot of change for her then."
"Yes," they agreed. He finished examining her and helped her to sit upright.
"Has she been to the toilet?"
"Only for a wee."
Her stomach doesn't feel bloated, and there is no soreness. Give her a choice of foods, and I'm sure she will settle in time."
"We've been doing that, but she doesn't seem to want anything to eat. Also, there are some sores on her back. I saw them when I bathed her." Elaine eased up the back of Anastasia's top, and the doctor took a closer look.
"I'll write a prescription for some cream to apply, and also some vitamin drops. The child will have a medical by your own doctor when you get home?"
"Yes," Elaine confirmed. A medical was standard practice when adopting from abroad, and had been mentioned in Dr. Chiabanu's notes and by other couples in the online forum. Many of the infants, especially the older children, were found to have iron and vitamin deficiencies from very poor diets, so it was important that this and any other medical conditions were diagnosed early and treated.
"When you take her to see your doctor, ask for a blood test," he said. "They should check her for HIV, syphilis, and gonorrhea."
Elaine stared at him, horrified.
"Her mother wasn't a prostitute," Ian said.
They knew these tests were advised if the mother was working as a prostitute, as some very poor women did, as she could have passed on the diseases to her unborn child.
"And the mother would tell you if she was?" the doctor asked, throwing Ian an old-fashioned look.
"We'll get the test done," Ian confirmed, and Elaine nodded. The doctor wrote the prescription.
"I'll include a mild sedative to help her sleep at night," he said. "Give her one dose an hour before bed. You can give her a dose before you get on the plane, too, to help keep her quiet. Flying will be a new experience for her. It upsets many children."
"Thank you," Elaine said. The doctor handed her the prescription and picked up the notepad by their telephone and wrote again.
"All children like these to eat," he said,
tearing off the sheet. He handed it to Elaine.
"Is she drinking?"
"Milkshakes," Elaine said.
"Good. She'll be fine."
He patted Anastasia's head, said something to her in their own language, and she nodded solemnly.
"Is she happy?"
Elaine blurted.
"Yes, of course. She has you and your husband,"
he said in a similar manner to Dr. Chiabanu. Ian paid the doctor and saw him to the door. Elaine took her daughter's hand.
"Don't worry, love. I promise you everything will be all right."
Although the possibility that she might be HIV positive plagued her all night long. Chapter 13. Good Girl. Anastasia slept very little that night, although she wasn't sick again. The following morning, shattered from another broken night, Ian and Elaine drank coffee and took it in turns to shower and dress, while the other one kept Anastasia amused. Once they were all ready, they went down to breakfast. It was the same waitress as the day before, and being aware that Anastasia hadn't eaten the porridge then, she now suggested something different, which Ian translated as a type of scrambled eggs. Elaine also ordered a milkshake for Anastasia, and croissants and coffee for herself, and Ian ordered a cooked breakfast. While they waited, Ian gave Anastasia his phone to play with. The food arrived and they'd only just begun when Anastasia, having drunk the milkshake but left the food, made a dash for the door. Ian brought her back to her chair and tried to tempt her with bits from his own plate, sharing the same fork.
"Is that wise?" Elaine asked. "I mean, if she has got something contagious, you might catch it."
"I suppose," Ian said,
and gave Anastasia his coffee spoon instead. She wasn't interested in using the spoon to eat, but loved the noise it made when banged against the edge of his china plate. Ian finished his meal quickly, gulped down the last of his coffee, and they left the dining room. They returned briefly to their hotel room for their coats, and then went down to reception and asked for directions to the nearest pharmacy. It was about a 10-minute walk, so they didn't need a cab. Pleased to be outside, Anastasia walked nicely between them, holding a hand each.
"Good girl," Elaine said, praising her at every opportunity.
In the pharmacy, they had to wait for the prescription to be made up, and the woman who served them gave Anastasia a lollipop, similar to the one she'd been given at the local supermarket. It seemed to be a custom for shopkeepers to keep a box of lollipops beside the till and give them to children who came in. As Ian paid, he showed her the piece of paper with the name of the food the doctor had written down and asked where they could buy it. To their surprise, the cashier took a packet of what looked like biscuits from the shelf.
"You sell them here?" Ian asked. "They are biscuits."
She turned the packet over and pointed to the ingredients on the back, and they understood that the biscuits were fortified with iron, vitamins and minerals. They bought a packet and on their way back to the hotel made a detour via the supermarket, where they bought some more milkshakes and bread and cold meats for their lunch. Anastasia was given another lollipop. They ate lunch in their hotel room. Anastasia didn't want the food they'd bought, but did drink a milkshake, and ate three of the fortified biscuits, which was something. Obviously, she couldn't live off these biscuits indefinitely, but at least they gave her some nutrition until she was more settled and began eating properly. Elaine decided that as the biscuits contained added vitamins and minerals, it was wise not to give Anastasia the vitamin drops the doctor had prescribed, as too many could be harmful. They spent the rest of the afternoon in their room, keeping Anastasia amused, and then ordered room service for dinner at 6 p.m. Anastasia had only a few mouthfuls, but ate another three fortified biscuits and drank another milkshake. Elaine gave her a bath, and an hour before her bedtime a spoonful of the sedative. They lay with her on their bed and looked at some children's books as she gradually grew drowsy and finally fell asleep. Ian carefully lifted her from their bed and tucked her into hers, where she remained asleep until nearly 7 a.m.
"I must be dreaming,"
Ian said when they woke. And what difference a good night's sleep made. Physically and emotionally refreshed, Elaine especially felt like a different person and was ready to face anything the day held. With more patience for Anastasia, her confidence in her role grew, and she also made time for Ian, for out of necessity their relationship had taken second place. During the next 7 days, while they waited for their documents to be processed, their routine was largely unchanged. They went out each day to buy more fortified biscuits, milkshakes, lunch, and whatever else they needed, and sometimes to the park, but it was too cold to stay long. Sometimes Ian said he had cabin fever and went for a walk around the block while Elaine stayed with Anastasia and had some mother and daughter time. Each evening, after Anastasia had her bath, Elaine gave her a dose of the sedative, and their sleeping routine returned to near normal. Although Elaine still woke at night worrying about Anastasia, especially her health, in addition to the massive concern that Anastasia might be HIV positive or have another disease passed on to her by her mother, she still wasn't eating, rarely spoke to them, even in her own language, and hadn't done a proper poo. The latter was doubtless due to her living on milkshakes and biscuits, but it was something else Elaine would need to see the doctor about on their return. She had a list, and it was growing. When Dr. Chiabanu finally telephoned to say that Anastasia's passport, visa and new birth certificate were ready and they could confirm their flight home, they were ecstatic. Ian took a cab to the orphanage where Dr. Chiabanu had his office, and Elaine stayed with Anastasia. There was no need for them all to go, and it could have been unsettling for Anastasia to revisit the orphanage. Ian was gone for an hour and returned clutching Anastasia's passport, which he proudly showed them. Elaine was delighted. They were finally going home. They texted family, friends, and their neighbour to let them know when they were returning. Then the only things left to do were pack and book the cab to take them to the airport, which they did at reception. They said that if possible, they'd like the cab driver, Danny, to take them. They hadn't seen him since he'd collected them from the airport, and they wanted to say goodbye and thank him for all those trips to the orphanage, when his happy, upbeat chat had been very welcome. The receptionist said she'd pass on their request to the cab firm. 2 days later, they were up early with the intention of having a quick breakfast before they had to leave for the airport. It didn't happen. It took far longer than they'd anticipated to get Anastasia ready, as she'd become unsettled and hyperactive by all the activity going on around. They tried to explain, using words from their phrasebook, that they were all going home, but to no avail. She ran around the room, banging on doors and trying to take items out of their cases. Elaine's stress level rose, and she semi-jokingly suggested to Ian that perhaps they should give Anastasia a dose of the sedative now, rather than an hour before the flight, as the doctor had said. Ian pointed out that if they did, it would very likely wear off during the flight, when it would be most needed. However, despite a stressful couple of hours and making do with coffee in their hotel room, Anastasia had a milkshake and fortified biscuits. They were down at reception with their luggage at 9:15 a.m. to check out and settle their bill, which was considerable because they'd used room service so much. 10 minutes later, to their delight, Danny strolled into the lobby and greeted them warmly.
"The cab firm told me you were leaving. Hello, Anastasia."
He smiled at her and repeated hello in their own language. Anastasia eyed him cautiously, no doubt wondering how he fitted into everything that was going on.
"You won't remember me waiting outside the orphanage," he said,
then said it again in their language. Anastasia tried to hold his hand and Danny laughed, but Elaine thought it slightly odd that she would want to hold the hand of a stranger. Danny picked up two of their suitcases and Ian took the third, and a little nostalgically they left the hotel, which had been their home for some weeks. Outside, Danny stowed their cases in the boot, while Ian helped Anastasia into the rear seat, where Elaine joined her with her hand luggage. Ian got into the front passenger seat. Starting the engine, Danny immediately struck up conversation, his usual bright and chatty self. He asked them if everything had gone to plan, how they'd passed the time, what the weather was like in the UK, if it snowed at Christmas, just over 3 weeks away, and then told them about his own family. Elaine saw Anastasia watching him intently and felt this was an opportunity too good to miss. So when he asked,
"How is your daughter?"
and Ian replied,
"Good,"
Elaine seized the moment. "Danny," she said, leaning slightly forward so she could see him round his seat, "we're not always sure what Anastasia needs or is feeling because we don't speak her language. Could you ask her some questions for me, please?"
"Yeah, sure,"
he said amicably, and glanced at Anastasia in the rearview mirror as he drove. "Please ask her if she has everything she needs," Elaine said. Danny translated, and Elaine saw the look of slight surprise on Anastasia's face that Danny was talking to her. She said just a couple of words in reply.
"She has what she needs," Danny said.
"Can you ask her if she understands we are her mummy and daddy? If not, please explain about going to court and the adoption. I don't know how much she has been told or understands." Danny straightened in his seat a little and, concentrating on the road ahead, began talking to Anastasia, occasionally glancing at her in the mirror. Anastasia sat motionless, staring at him, but nothing could be read in her expression. Ian turned in his seat to glance at her. Danny stopped talking and Anastasia looked at her and Ian, and then said a few words in her own language.
"She understands now," Danny said.
But she didn't understand before? Elaine asked, immediately concerned. Dr. Chiabanu was supposed to have explained.
Danny shrugged, clearly uncomfortable about blaming the doctor.
It's difficult for a small child to understand, he said. I told her she is going to have a wonderful life with her new mummy and daddy in England.
Thank you, Elaine said, sitting back.
Don't worry, Danny said a moment later. Everything will be good when you get home. You have medicine to make her sleep on the plane?
Yes, Elaine said, surprised he knew.
Good. Children can be frightened on the plane, so the doctor gives the parents medicine to make them sleep.
So, other couples who have adopted see a doctor here? Elaine asked.
Yes, most do.
Which made Elaine feel a bit better. They weren't the only ones to have had concerns. A few moments passed and then Anastasia said something very quietly to Danny in her own language, and he replied.
What did she say? Elaine asked.
I told her she doesn't have to go to the orphanage anymore.
This wasn't exactly what Elaine had asked, but she didn't pursue it. Danny was a decent guy and wouldn't have said anything untoward.
All will be good, he said,
then began chatting to them in English about Christmas and how his kids were already very excited. There was no further conversation between Anastasia and Danny during the journey, although Elaine saw her watching him carefully. 15 minutes later, they pulled into the airport and Danny parked in one of the drop-off bays and fetched a trolley. Ian drew Anastasia out of the car and took Elaine's hand luggage, which contained, among other things, a change of clothes for Anastasia, the small bottle of sedative and her biscuits. Danny loaded their cases onto the trolley, and Ian paid him and included a good tip. They both thanked him for being their driver and wished him a Merry Christmas. He shook their hands and then said,
"Bye, Anastasia. You be a good girl."
She immediately threw her arms around him and hugged him. He laughed good-humouredly, but again Elaine felt it was slightly odd that Anastasia could spontaneously show affection to someone she barely knew, but not to them. Perhaps Danny reminded her of someone, or perhaps it was simply because he spoke her language. It was impossible to know. With a parting goodbye, Danny returned to his cab, and Ian pushed the trolley towards the departure hall as Elaine walked beside him, holding Anastasia's hand.
Airport, Elaine told her as they went. We are going on an aeroplane.
She felt excited at the prospect, even if her daughter didn't. It would become so much easier once Anastasia learned English, which Elaine would concentrate on once home. Their plane wasn't due to leave for another 3 hours, but the flight information board showed their check-in desk was open.
Excellent, Ian said. We can get rid of all our cases and then have breakfast. I might even have a beer.
Anastasia was fascinated by all the people with their luggage and stood still watching them as they waited in line to check in. They had been warned to expect some questions about their child's status, and Ian had the adoption papers ready in his briefcase to show if necessary. As it was, the check-in agent only asked, "Is she your daughter?" as she looked at her passport. Ian said yes, and Elaine nodded. Then they were asked to load their cases onto the conveyor belt one at a time. The agent tagged them and sent them on their way, then handed Ian their passports and boarding cards, pointing out the gate number they would need later. The first stage of their journey home was completed. They decided to go through security clearance first before they ate, as there would be a better selection of restaurants and cafes on the other side. Anastasia was mesmerized by security and the queue that slowly snaked its way forward through the scanner, having never seen metal detectors before. One small child, fractious from waiting, threw a tantrum, screaming and kicking his father as he tried to pick him up. Elaine was so pleased it wasn't them having to deal with it, as people were looking. Ian walked through the scanner first, followed by Elaine, holding Anastasia's hand. Then they collected their hand luggage from being X-rayed.
All done,
Ian said to Anastasia. Having checked the flight information board, they used the toilets and then found a restaurant that served a full English breakfast. Elaine was hungry too, having only had a coffee at the hotel, and ordered the same as Ian.
They also ordered a child's portion of the cooked breakfast, in the hope that Anastasia, seeing them eating it, would follow suit, although it hadn't worked at the hotel.
"Good girl,"
Elaine praised as Anastasia sat nicely at the table, and they waited for their food to arrive. She was interested in everything going on around her, studying people and what they were doing.
"She's like you, a people watcher," Ian said, and Elaine laughed.
When their food arrived, Elaine cut up Anastasia's and then watched her out of the corner of her eye as she picked up her fork. They were delighted when she began eating and amazed when she finished most of her breakfast. It was the first proper meal she'd had since the adoption over a week before.
"Good girl!" Elaine exclaimed, kissing her cheek.
"Well done,"
Ian said, and smiled at her across the table. Although Anastasia might not have understood the words, surely their expressions conveyed how happy they were with her, so why didn't she return their smile or look pleased, instead of just staring at them blankly?
"You don't think there could be something wrong with her, do you?" Elaine asked Ian, still watching Anastasia.
"Like what?"
"Autism?"
"Of course not," Ian said sharply. "She's just overawed by everything that has happened. It's been an incredible and stressful experience for us, and we were well prepared. So imagine what it must be like for her."
Which, of course, was perfectly true, and Elaine felt bad for even suggesting there was something wrong with Anastasia. Having settled the bill, they wandered around the shops in the departure lounge, keeping an eye on the flight information board. They bought some small gifts for their family and friends, hand-painted coasters, fridge magnets, and the like. Ian said he was going to have the beer he'd promised himself, but he'd be quick. As he went to the bar, Elaine took Anastasia to watch the planes through the viewing gallery. Ian joined them when he'd finished. 45 minutes before takeoff, the flight information board changed to show their gate number, and a message came over the public address system to say that all passengers on their flight should make their way to the boarding gate.
"Medicine!" Elaine exclaimed, having previously forgotten.
"Don't worry, there's still time for it to work," Ian said. "And if it doesn't, Anastasia will be interested in the takeoff."
"I'm not so sure. It could upset her."
Elaine delved frantically into her hand luggage and took out the small plastic bottle of medicine and spoon. Anastasia didn't mind taking the syrup. It was very sweet. Elaine returned the bottle and spoon to her bag, and they made their way to the waiting area by the departure gate, which was filling quickly. A couple moved along a seat so the three of them could sit together. Elaine took a book from her bag to keep Anastasia amused. It explained with large, colourful pictures and short sentences what happened during a flight. Ian had read it to Anastasia in their hotel room to help prepare her, and Elaine read it again now. But Anastasia was more interested in what was going on around her.
"She's being a good girl,"
the woman next to them remarked.
"Long may it continue," Elaine replied with a smile.
"Indeed, for there's nothing worse than a screaming child on a long flight," the woman returned, stony-faced.
Chapter 14. Settling In. Anastasia didn't like having to stay in her seat on the plane.
"It's just until takeoff," Elaine said as the last few passengers boarded. "Then you can sit on my lap."
They had three seats together, and Anastasia was by the window, but there wasn't much of interest to see at present, just tarmac and the wing of the plane. Elaine was sitting next to Anastasia, and Ian was in the aisle seat. To keep Anastasia occupied, they'd taken a selection of books and activities from their hand luggage, which was now stored in the overhead locker. Elaine couldn't get Anastasia interested in the books and toys. She squirmed and moaned, then got off her seat again and tried to squeeze past Elaine. Elaine was already flustered, and it could be a while before the sedative took effect. Ian suggested they change seats, so he was next to Anastasia, and he lifted her into her seat, fastened her lap belt, and gave her his phone to play with. This kept her reasonably occupied until they were ready for takeoff, when the captain's voice came over the public address system and asked that all electronic devices be switched off and put away, ready for takeoff.
"You can have it again later," Ian said, trying to swap his phone for her toy one. It didn't work.
Anastasia's grip tightened, and, not wanting a scene, he let her keep it until the stewards approached, making their last-minute checks, when he took the phone from her. This was a first for Anastasia. Until now, Ian and Elaine had always given her what she wanted, and, like many children her age, she wasn't happy about not getting her own way. She threw all the books and toys off her lap onto the floor, then struggled to get out from under her seatbelt again. Ian tried talking calmly to her, explaining that she had to sit in her seat for takeoff.
"Look," he said, pointing to the view through the window. "The plane is starting to move."
Anastasia gave it a cursory glance and then wriggled down under her lap belt as the plane began to taxi towards the runway. Ian sat her upright and tightened the belt. She pulled at the belt angrily, tried to unfasten it, and when she couldn't, temper got the better of her and she began kicking the back of the seat in front. Ian put his hand on her legs to stop her, but the man in front had already turned round and Elaine apologized, her cheeks flushed. She could feel other passengers looking at the spectacle Anastasia was making, and the woman they'd sat next to earlier in the departure lounge was only a few rows in front.
"Look,"
Ian said again, pointing to the window and trying to distract Anastasia.
"We're going to take off soon."
The plane had taxied to the end of the runway and taken up its position. The engines revved and then they were moving faster and faster. Anastasia stared through the window, her face very serious as they hurtled down the runway.
"We're going up into the sky," Ian said.
But the sudden change in air pressure made their ears pop, and Anastasia clamped her hands over her ears and screamed.
"Swallow, love," Elaine said, leaning across Ian. "Just keep swallowing. It won't last long."
Anastasia wasn't the only infant upset by the change in air pressure. Further behind them, a baby had started to cry. The plane continued its ascent, and Anastasia screamed. Then she took her hands from her ears, babbled something in her own language, and struggled frantically to get out of her seat, perhaps thinking she could leave the plane. Ian placed a restraining hand on her lap.
"When the seatbelt sign goes off, you can sit on my lap," he said, which was meaningless to her.
She kicked the seat in front again, and again Elaine apologized and willed Anastasia to behave. Finally, the plane stopped climbing, and the change in air pressure eased. Anastasia relaxed, and putting her thumb in her mouth, rested her head back and gazed out of the window.
"Look at all those fluffy white clouds. Aren't they beautiful?" Ian said.
But Anastasia's eyes were heavy now as the medicine kicked in. She sucked her thumb, and a few minutes later, she was asleep.
"Oh, thank goodness," Elaine said with a huge sigh of relief. "Hopefully she'll sleep for most of the flight. Can you put the blanket over her? I can't reach."
Ian took the blanket provided out of its sealed plastic bag and draped it over Anastasia. He held his wife's hand, and they began to unwind. The seatbelt sign went off, and the stewards came down the aisle with the drinks trolley. Ian suggested to Elaine that they buy a half bottle of champagne to celebrate. They hadn't actually toasted the adoption, and what better time than on the plane going home with their daughter. As they sipped champagne from plastic wine flutes, Elaine turned to Ian.
"I've been thinking about Anastasia's name," she said. "It's quite a mouthful, and rather unusual in England. What do you think about shortening it to Anna?"
Ian thought for a moment. "Yes. Good idea. I like that. Let's drink to our daughter Anna and her new life in England." Anastasia, or rather Anna, as she was now to be called, remained asleep for most of the flight. She missed the in-flight meal, but Ian and Elaine weren't worried. She'd had a good breakfast at the airport and could make up for it later at dinner after they'd landed. They gazed at her as she slept, her head relaxed back, lips slightly parted, and so peaceful. Her thumb slipped from her mouth, and Ian stroked a few wisps of hair away from her cheek. She was certainly a very beautiful child, but then they would have thought that about any child who was theirs. When Anna woke, it was with a start. She sat bolt upright, staring around, clearly wondering where she was.
"You're on a plane," Ian said gently. "We're nearly home. We'll be in England soon."
She looked at him blankly, as she usually did when they talked to her, probably because she didn't understand. Elaine offered her one of the juice drinks she'd bought at the airport.
"Thirsty? Drink?" she asked,
and Anna nodded. The captain's voice came over the public address system and announced they would be landing in 30 minutes. Elaine took Anna to the toilet before a queue formed. Then, still slightly drowsy from the medication, Anna was content to sit in her seat and gaze out of the window until the plane began its descent. As the air pressure dropped, Anna covered her ears and began moaning loudly, then shook her head roughly from side to side, as though trying to clear the popping. Ian soothed her and Elaine told her to swallow, but they were very relieved when the plane finally landed.
"Thank goodness we had the sedative to give her," Elaine said quietly to Ian, "or it would have been a lot worse. I doubt she would have settled at all."
"She did well. Her first plane journey," Ian said positively.
With the plane parked ready for disembarkation, Anna was content to sit in her seat and watch all the hustle and bustle going on around her as passengers stood to retrieve their hand luggage and mobile phones bleeped. Ian suggested waiting until the crush had eased before they left. Then they stood, retrieved their hand luggage and, with their coats on, followed the other passengers off the plane and into the much cooler air of the jet bridge. Elaine held Anna's hand and reassured her as they stepped onto the moving travelator. It was another new experience for her. As they waited for their luggage, Anna grew restless again, so Elaine gave her the last of the fortified biscuit. "Proper meals for you from now on," she said. Anna stared at her blankly and munched. Thankfully, there wasn't much of a wait at passport control, and 3/4 of an hour after landing they were outside in the long-stay car park, looking for their car. It was dark now in early evening in winter, and the lamps in the car park weren't that bright. A little disorientated from the flight, it took them some minutes to locate their car. While Ian stowed their luggage in the boot, Elaine helped Anna into her car seat. Brand new and now being used for the first time, Elaine adjusted the belt so they fitted snugly over Anna's shoulders and around her lap. "We're going home," she told her with a smile and kissed her cheek. Making sure her little hands were clear of the door, she closed it and joined Ian in the front. As Ian drove, Elaine fed a CD of popular children's songs into the player. The first song was "The Wheels on the Bus," which was a long-time children's favourite that Elaine knew by heart from her own childhood. She turned in her seat so she could see Anna and gently sang along. The second song was another children's classic, "If You're Happy and You Know It, Clap Your Hands." Elaine and Ian began singing, and Elaine clapped her hands. Yes, they were happy, very happy indeed. And as Anna joined in clapping, Elaine's eyes filled. There'd been many times when she'd thought they'd never have a family, and now here they were. She was so grateful, she said a silent prayer of thanks. It was after 8 p.m. when they arrived home, but their house wasn't cold, nor was their fridge empty, as their good neighbour had been in. She'd also left a present for Anna and a congratulations card. Anna unwrapped the present, a soft toy, and Elaine put the card on the mantelpiece with the one they'd already received from Ian's brother, sent at the time of their first trip to adopt. They were tired, needed to get organised, and didn't feel up to speaking at length to family and friends, so texted them to let them know they were all home safely and that they'd phone as soon as they'd recovered from their journey. Ian showed Anna around the house, telling her the English names for the rooms, while Elaine made them something to eat. She was delighted when Anna finished most of her dinner. It seemed to bode well for her future eating. Elaine then took Anna upstairs to get ready for bed as Ian unpacked the essentials from their cases. They'd do the rest tomorrow. As it was getting late, she just gave Anna a wash and brushed her teeth that night. She'd have a bath tomorrow. Then, once she was in bed, Elaine and Ian sat beside her and read her some bedtime stories. It was a special moment, and one they'd treasure forever. Anna's first night in her very own bedroom. They'd chosen the furnishings together, a white and pink colour scheme with a Cinderella-patterned duvet cover and matching curtains and rug. The shelves contained an assortment of soft toys, books, games and toys, and brightly coloured mobiles hung from the ceiling, turning in the air. The wardrobe and drawers held a good selection of clothes and shoes, which would be added to as she grew. They took photographs of Anastasia in her bed on her first night, but they couldn't persuade her to smile. "She must be very tired," Ian said, feeling this was the reason. They kissed her good night and came out, leaving the door slightly ajar, then waited on the landing to see if she would settle.